The word antahpura refers to the heart. The word vishuchina, meaning going everywhere, indicates the mind. Within the mind, the living entity enjoys the effects of the modes of material nature. These effects sometimes cause illusion, sometimes satisfaction, and sometimes jubilation. Purport. The mind and intelligence of the living entity, material existence, are affected by the modes of material nature. And according to the association of the material modes, the mind is habituated to go here and there. The heart feels satisfaction, jubilation, or illusion according to the effects of the modes of material nature. Actually, the living entity in his material condition remains inert. It is the modes of material nature that act on the mind and the heart. The results are enjoyed or suffered by the living entity. This is clearly stated in the Bhagavad Gita, 3:27. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankaravi mudatma kartaham iti manite. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by nature. You want me to read the next verse? Yata yata vikriyate gunakto vikarato diva tata tato padrashtatma tadritir anukaryate. Formerly it was explained that the queen is one's intelligence. While one is awake or asleep, that intelligence creates different situations. Being influenced by contaminated intelligence, the living entity envisions something and simply imitates the actions and reactions of his intelligence. Purport. The queen of Puranjana is described herein as intelligence itself. Intelligence acts both in the dream state and in the waking state, but it is contaminated by the three modes of material nature. Since the intelligence is contaminated, the living entity is also contaminated. In the conditioned state, the living entity acts according to his contaminated intelligence. Although he simply remains an observer, he nonetheless acts, being forced by a contaminated intelligence, which in reality is a passive agent. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaya Srimade Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatam Deve Gauravani Vracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya De Sitarne. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Iti Jnanam Tata Jnanam Jayam Choktam Samasata Mad Bhakta Etad Vigaya Madhava Nopapadite. Krishna has already explained about the field, the kshetra, about jnana, knowledge, and the jaya, the knower of the field. But then he says, only my devotees can understand this, and thus obtain my transcendental nature. Especially these verses tend to be rather confusing because they're very subtle. I don't know if I can make it any less confusing. But here it mentions that the living entity is the observer. That we shouldn't have a hard time experiencing the fact that we're observing. Now, who's the observer? We're the observer. And what we're observing, we're experiencing the varieties of material existence, gross and subtle. And here it mentions that there are three different states of conceptions of life. One is that life is a struggle. The other is life is enjoyable. And the other is life is meant for illumination. So these are three states of intelligence. I'm struggling, I'm enjoying, or I'm becoming advanced in illumination. I'm understanding. Now, generally what we're understanding is that neither I should be struggling nor trying to enjoy. That's understanding.
anything else is just an illusion. To think I learned how to struggle better is not exactly. Of course, learning how to struggle better means that we're struggling less, not more. And I'm learning how to enjoy. Actually, real enjoyment is give up the spirit of enjoyment. That's real understanding. Everything else is just illusion. Unfortunately, people think that if I learn how to struggle, if I'm struggling, that in itself is worthy of praise. We brag to each other how much we're struggling with my mind or the other aspects of our life. Or we're explaining how much I'm enjoying. But actually, everyone is actually suffering unless they learn how to give up struggling and enjoying, trying to enjoy. So there's the observer, ourselves, and here it says that if we're struggling, the result is that we'll be an illusion. Because we're actually struggling against Krishna. And everyone who struggles against Krishna loses. It's rather disappointing at the end. Karshati, it says in Bhagavad Gita. And if we're trying to enjoy, the result is, Krishna says, is in the mode of passion, greed to enjoy, because that's what enjoying means. If I satisfy my lust, then the result is I want to satisfy my lust more, and it turns into greed. And Krishna says greed turns into unhappiness, dukkha. And here it mentions harsham. So at first there's jubilation. We feel in the mode of passion and type of enlivenment. We have energy. Let's utilize it for enjoyment. So that's called jubilation. But ultimately it turns out to be from lust comes frustration after greed. And the living entity is the observer of all this. And then of course there's satisfaction. When we give up, when we don't feel like we're struggling so much, and we're not hankering for anything, then we feel satisfied. That usually means in modern society, people struggle to buy their new iPod. And when they get it, and in order to do it, they utilize a lot of energy in great jubilation, they're going to be happy when they get it. They finally get it, they feel satisfied for an hour or two. And then they feel frustrated that someone else has a better iPod than they have. And they're going to have to work again to get the better iPod. So the satisfaction is insignificant compared to the struggle to get it and the amount of time you actually can enjoy it. And Olivier is observing this, but without knowledge, without real knowledge, all he does is dovetail his desires with the desires that arise from his previous activities. He examines those desires and figures out if that desire that just passes through his mind, if it's that of struggle, he decides whether he wants to struggle. If it's that of jubilation, he decides whether jubilation is appropriate or satisfaction, whatever. Different desires arise within the mind and he chooses them. Generally, the living entity, in goodness, he seeks for a balance. In other words, he tries not to be lethargic, and he tries not to be overly aggressive. He tries to be balanced so that his intelligence isn't lost. Those in the mode of ignorance, they tend to be lethargic, and those in the mode of passion, to some degree or another, they tend to be overly aggressive. And those who are transcendental, they know that this is all, more or less, that the proper mood is devotion to Krishna. It's a whole other realm of activity. Everything else within the material energy, gross or subtle, is more or less all centered around the body. What is the body doing? What the body's not doing? What the body could be doing? What it'll do in the future? What it did in the past? Etc. Gross and subtle. But it has nothing to do with the self. The self is simply sitting there, dovetailing its desires with whatever comes by, and it thinks it's doing something, but it's actually just being forced by the material energy to to desire something. So he's actually not doing anything, just sitting there inactive, imagining that it's doing so many things, but actually it's simply desiring. But in the spiritual world, when it becomes awake, then its desires itself are activity, because they're in relation to Krishna. Therefore, he desires to do things in relation to Krishna. He's actually alive and active, because his actual position, his actual activities are being manifested, rather than sitting there watching. Just like you may sit there all day watching a television, doing nothing. You're doing something. You're experiencing something, because you're happy when the hero wins and you're unhappy when he loses. So there's some experience. But you're not really doing anything. If the hero gains $1 million, your bank account stays the same. You can die, and the hero overeats on television, you may starve to death simultaneously. On the other hand, your real activities will, well, more active activities is when you turn the television set off and you go to work, and you work, and or you eat something. Similarly, the soul may be watching the whole drama of the material energy, the body, but actually it's just a seemingly a leela, just like Prabhupada says, that the whole world is dancing with Krishna, but those who are dancing trying to imitate Krishna, they're dancing in Krishna's illusory energy. And those who are dancing in Krishna's following Krishna, they're dancing with his rasa dance. So when we watch this body go by with all the activities, either in goodness or in passion and ignorance, we get that experience. Certainly, it is more exciting to be jubilant than it is to be an illusion, to wander around trying to figure out what the purpose of life is, how to eat, sleep, make, defend at that moment. To wander around in complete illusion that my whole life is just meant to satisfy my senses. Certainly it's better to be a little jubilant, a little enthusiastic. But unless the actual object of enthusiasm is there, one will simply wind up doing the same thing with all that energy and enthusiasm. Just like the vulture, he flies high into the sky, 2 miles into the air. But what is his business? He's so high up. He's looking down the body for dead. He's looking down the ground to find a dead body to swoop down and get it. So we may be jubilant, but if we're jubilant about sense gratification, then the result is we'll try to enjoy the senses and we'll wind up in illusion. Morose, depressed, bewildered. I thought she loved me. I thought it was going to be romance forever. And she left me. And it's only been 2 weeks. Complete bewilderment and illusion. Therefore, one has to use one's intelligence to find out what actually is the purpose of the intelligence and how to utilize it. So that comes from hearing. When we hear about devotion to Krishna, then we have an alternative to devotion to our body and mind. Or we may extend it and start thinking, just like people nowadays, they don't want to do anything, hardly. They can't do anything. They're so... because they've dissipated their energy so much by sense gratification, by the time they're 30, they're ready to retire, but they can't do it. So they used to play sports when they were 10 or 15, and now all they can do is watch sports. And they imagine when their team wins that they won. The devotees had Rath Yatra in Madrid. I don't know, I guess it must have been Barcelona. And somehow or another, they had to set up the by the beach. They were setting up the Rath Yatra carts and everything. They were going to have their festival there. But it just so happened that Spain won, was playing in the finals of the World Cup. And therefore the city, by their mercy, were you there? They set up the chairs by the beach and a huge screen so everyone if they came down to the Rathyatra site, would be able to watch the World Cup game. And they put Lord Jagannath also facing the screen, so he could also watch the World Cup game. So however long it lasted for, everyone was completely absorbed in the World Cup. And fortunately, Spain won. Otherwise, everyone would have been in trouble, even Lord Jagannath probably. People were and because they won, they were completely in euphoric. They were completely in bliss, material bliss. They thought they won. But what did they win? It's hard to understand what they won. If they would have lost, what would they have lost? But they would have felt it very deeply. So similarly, this body, we're absorbed in it completely. When it becomes a winner, we feel like we've won. My body won, my mind, I won. But where did we go? We went nowhere. We're still in the same illusion, same foolish soul sitting there, forgetting Krishna, enjoying the moment that I won. Won what? It's just all this is just a combination of the different energies of Krishna, material energies, which don't reciprocate with us. They just give us experience in the material energy. And if we lost, if we lose, this body loses, what do we lose? The soul still hasn't gained anything. He can't lose anything here. He can be an illusion, he's gained something, or he can lament that he lost something, but actually he doesn't own anything here. He's simply sitting there. We're just sitting there in the material energy, looking around, trying to experience something here. But all our experiences ultimately, sometimes there's jubilation, and sometimes there's disappointment, and sometimes for a brief period of time, we feel satisfied. I don't need anything. I don't have to lament over anything. I feel satisfied until someone comes along and tells us some bad news so we can feel bad, or tries to encourage us to enjoy. Hey, let's go and enjoy. You look too satisfied. But it's more or less, as I've explained before, this is just like a dream where we're worshipping, we become worshippers of a dead deity, this body. And although, just like a puppet, you put your hand in the puppet and it moves around, and it looks like it's doing something, playing on, you know, cymbals that don't make any sound or making faces. Put your hands in the puppet and you're doing something. You're not really the puppet. You may think I'm the puppet now. You may think I'm doing something, but it's just your hands in the puppet. So because the soul's in the body, by his energy, because he's there, he appears to be doing something, but actually he's not really doing anything. And when he leaves the body, the puppet-like body is seen as it really is, just a puppet. Being moved by the soul and by the super soul, by their energies. Actually, it's ultimately the super soul. But he senses our desire, just like one can understand the flavor of a flower by smelling it, and he arranges the material energy. So these are all very subtle. But Krishna says, ultimately, even if we can't understand it very clearly, all we have to do is render service to Krishna. But render service to Krishna and try to get out of these misconceptions. The main misconception is, I did such nice service. Go ahead. Shout it louder. Encourage me. Or I got that wrong, I did something wrong, I'm so embarrassed, I think I'll bloop, go somewhere where I can be glorified for all my mistakes. So we're just absorbed in this drama, and when we're so-called successful, we want praise and adoration and distinction and profit, whatever else. And when we're so-called unsuccessful, then we're embarrassed and we become angry and frustrated and want to explain why actually we didn't do anything wrong. I'm a victim or something like that. It's everyone else's fault or they don't understand me correctly. And besides that, it's offensive to criticize a devotee. And as soon as you say, I did anything wrong, you're being an offender, I'm a victim, etc. So these dramas that we go through, they're just wasting our time. Actually, the real conception is that this body is an opportunity, this mind is an opportunity to be utilized for service to Krishna, to do things nicely for Krishna with the body. And nicely means, to begin with, to pay attention to what we're doing. There's no question of doing anything nicely for Krishna unless we pay attention. If our mind is wandering towards, you know, what I did yesterday, lamenting over the fact that I wasn't successful yesterday, or someone else did better than I did, and they got more praise than I did, or I got criticized, but to speak of praise, someone criticized me, or I felt bad, whatever. So we're doing our service, but we're just meditating somewhere in outer space somewhere, some illusory past that we went through. We're hankering for a better future. I'm going to do this so nicely that certainly I'm going to get praise for it, or I'll get some extra prasadam for it, or something good is going to happen to me because I'm doing it so nicely. And when I get into that situation, my body, I'll be blissful. My body will feel great, my mind will feel satisfied, and I'll enjoy. But that's all illusion. Because how long, even you go out and you do 100 books every day for 3 months, and everyone's going, Jai, as soon as they see you, Maharati. But the time will come, you're out there in book distribution, you only do 99 and you're suffering in your mind. My reputation's at stake. People come back and think, what happened to the Maharati? He fell into the modes of nature. And we're disappointed. In other words, as long as we do our service in the modes, we'll always be in anxiety, hankering, lamenting, and we'll never do the service with devotion. On the other hand, if we pay attention to what we're doing, then there's no possibility of the modes being present, or less possibility of the modes capturing us. We actually do, and then try to do it nicely for Krishna. That's called bhakti. There's no question of doing anything nice for Krishna. We can do things very nicely, but it won't be for Krishna. So we have to, if we're actually doing it for Krishna, then we should try to do it as nicely as we can, and then for Krishna. And that nicest for Krishna as possible is in that mood of bhakti. It's for Krishna's pleasure, with love. Then the result is, then the atmosphere changes, and we change. Then we can actually feel some, then Krishna will reciprocate. He won't necessarily give us some glorification. It's not that, you know, suddenly someone with a video, Krishna calls up someone with a video to he's doing it with love. Quick, get it. We may even be criticized for what we're doing. Although we may have done it with love and devotion and very great concentration and attention, someone may come along and criticize us for it. Even sometimes they criticize Prabhupada. One person was hearing Prabhupada chanting, and he criticized one of his godbrothers how Prabhupada's chanting was not very nice. Its sound was not very harmonious. Prabhupada said they even criticized Lord Chaitanya. Why is he dancing and chanting like a madman? So, Lord Chaitanya, what do you think? Oh, maybe I should change my dancing and chanting. I'm being criticized. No, he was doing it purely out of love for Krishna. Of course, in that mood, you feel, actually, my love is inadequate. I'm not really doing it lovingly enough. I'm not doing it attentively enough to please Krishna. Now, look at me, Krishna. I love you so much. Aren't you impressed? No, the devotee, then he feels, I can't give enough love, I can't do it nicely enough for Krishna. And then when one feels Krishna's reciprocation, one realizes that actually whatever I do is insignificant. Therefore, all I can do is try to serve my spiritual master, this is simple succession, to the best of my ability, and try to please them. Then there's another drama that goes on. There's a drama of Krishna, please engage me in loving service. Whatever drama is going on, whatever our karma has manifested itself as activities, or our ability to do work in this world, that manifests itself as an attempt to do that work in a pleasing way to Krishna and his devotees. Then our atmosphere changes, not necessarily the work. Of course, if that's, we become under the influence of the spiritual atmosphere, then certainly our work will become better in one sense. It'll become more devotional, at least. And our ability to concentrate on what we're doing will certainly be better, because we'll have less distraction. The spiritual atmosphere purifies us from the hankering lamentation we're accustomed to, because it's spiritual energy. And at the same time, by that higher experience, it encourages us to get back into that spiritual energy, or to stay within it as long as possible. Otherwise, if we aren't really aiming for that spiritual experience, to actually believe, first of all, we have to believe that Krishna exists, that Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī exists, even my spiritual master, he's actually a devotee, or my other senior devotees are actually doing things out of devotion. That these, it's real, they're real persons, and I can actually be factually devoted to them. Although at first we don't know exactly what that means. All we can do is try, and when Krishna is pleased by our effort, he'll give us the intelligence to understand what it actually is all about, what devotional service is. But if we don't try to do that, and we just remain absorbed in our drama, we may go through a drama and we may become glorified in, you know, all the zones in the world. Everyone may think, oh, they're so advanced. But as long as we're absorbed in this drama, this body, that now my body has so much wealth, and has so many followers, it is so intelligent, this is the best experience I've had in the material world so far. And so many people think I'm God, and they're willing to surrender to me, and whatever I tell them they do. So if that's what our mood is, then we may be high for some time on that material atmosphere, but eventually we'll crash into the lower modes of nature. At least in our next lifetime, we may not be born as Jagat Guru. We may be born in some other situation. Therefore, whether we're Jagat Guru or we're simply the pot washer in the kitchen, the important thing is to do it for Krishna in devotion. And then we'll be in the spiritual atmosphere. Whether we're a little squirrel trying to put the little grain of the little rock onto the Lord Ramachandra's bridge across Sri Lanka, or we're Hanuman throwing boulders, it won't make any difference. At least it won't make any difference to Krishna. And that's who we're actually trying to relate to, is Krishna, rather than his body. That will give us some permanent relationship with Krishna and take us out of this misconception that my relationship should be with his body. So, I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Why some people in ignorance and some in passion, some in goodness? Because of our past activities. We work more in goodness in our last lifetime, we'll be in goodness. If we work more in passion, we'll be more in passion. But generally we can take it for granted that most of us started with a good amount of ignorance. And we gradually worked ourselves a little bit into jubilation. But the more jubilant you are, modern society has dovetailed people's jubilation or energy or excitement all towards the lower modes of nature. So, by the time people are 15 years old or whatever, they become very jubilant. But about what? Intoxication, illicit sex, eating all kinds of garbage, and speculating like anything. So their jubilation rapidly turns into mode of ignorance. So everyone starts out as different modes, but generally everyone winds up in the darkest modes of ignorance by the time they're ready to go on to the next. So modern society is very equalizing. It equalizes everyone, puts them to the lowest mode of nature possible. Yes?
Should we have anxiety for Krishna service, and how much should that anxiety be? Because on one hand, Krishna is also in control, and he's helping the devotee. How much anxiety does the devotee keep for himself?
Well, anxiety for Krishna is all right, but generally speaking, our anxiety is little for Krishna and a lot for ourselves. Generally speaking, our first business is to avoid anxiety. Unless it's directly something that is clear as day that this is what Krishna wants me to do, coming through him to simple succession, and I've accepted it as my service. And therefore, while I'm doing my service to Krishna, really in full consciousness that I'm doing it for Krishna, if there is some obstacle or some difficulty that produces anxiety, then I accept it as part of my service. And that anxiety should help me focus my mind more on Krishna so that I can do the service better for Krishna. But just general anxiety over whether I'm successful or not, you know, unless it's very clear as whether it's for Krishna, then it's just anxiety. Plain ordinary anxiety. So the proof that it's for Krishna is that it helps me focus my mind more on Krishna. And the other side, if there's anxiety and I'm not focusing my mind more and more on Krishna, it's more or less indicating that I'm doing it for some other reason than to please Krishna. Taking my mind further away from Krishna, from devotional service. Yes?
It seems like the mind is pretty much conditioned for the explanation of the desires and the motivation we have. It's very much motivated by the laws of nature. So, is there a way to develop these desires to?
That's what we're doing. First of all, the main thing is to get the proper conception of what's going on. And for that, we have to hear. That's why we have the Bhagavatam class. So we can hear from the Bhagavatam. But in order to hear from the Bhagavatam, we also have to appreciate the speaker, what they're saying, because whatever the Bhagavatam says, and through the speaker, because the speaker can only give this realization of the Bhagavatam is Krishna. We have to appreciate that the speaker has something valuable to say in my life, some conception of that will help me change my life and make it more spiritual. So if we accept that the speaker is giving me some spiritual conception of how to work in the material world with this body, my mind, and intelligence, so it becomes devotional service to Krishna, that if I accept that and do it, then the result is I should become conscious of Krishna. Then when I become conscious of Krishna, then the atmosphere changes and I realize eventually that there was really, as soon as I'm taking, the more I take shelter of Krishna, the less I'm disturbed by the material modes of nature. And instead of that, I live with Krishna. I don't live in the material energy anymore. I don't live with my material conceptions of life anymore. Is that right? Yes?
I was thinking that in material consciousness it's always some kind of anxiety, like always. Instead, I guess it depends on what mode you're in, but it's always, it's almost like you can't be really free from anxiety unless you're connected with Krishna.
It sounds like a good plan by Krishna. You can't get free from, Mother Chaibhaja said that you can't get free from anxiety. You're always in anxiety unless you take shelter of Krishna.
Yeah.
Well, that's the plan. Vipadak shantu taksha svat tatra tatra jagat guru bhavatad darshanam nyasya apana parva darshanam Queen Kunti was praying, I wish that we can see these calamities again and again, so we can see you again and again, so there'd be no more seeing a repeated birth and death. So the material energy works like that. It burns us like fire, so that we become encouraged to take shelter of Krishna. Otherwise, there would be no impetus to take shelter of Krishna. And as soon as we take, as much as we take shelter of Krishna, then the fire of material anxiety goes away. Of course, then there's a positive anxiety, as we've heard. But that anxiety is, I'm not close enough to Krishna. Just like Lord Chaitanya was running everywhere, the six Goswamis, looking for Krishna in complete anxiety. But that brought them closer and closer to Krishna at every moment. They were more and more absorbed in Krishna, in the atmosphere of Krishna consciousness at every moment because of that. Therefore, there was no material anxiety. There was simply blissful spiritual anxiety, which has nothing to do with material anxiety. Yes.
I'm thinking that some Christian saints developed very well this mood of Sharanagati.
Who did?
Christian saints.
Christian saints.
Saints. And, in a Krishna consciousness, sometimes it's difficult to think how to give yourself to Krishna because Krishna is very far away. He's enjoying in his Goloka Vrindavan. But that.
Well, maybe. Take a look around. He's also enjoying right here in Radhadesh.
Should we think that God is everywhere, or should we think that?
Well, you should think that, first of all, you're a spiritual being, and that within your heart, God is there, giving you remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. That without His mercy, you would not be able to remember anything, you wouldn't be able to forget anything, nor would you have any knowledge. So you have an intimate relationship at every moment, eternally with God, with Krishna. Whether or not you want to acknowledge it or not, that's one thing. If you want to take credit for whatever you remember, whatever you forget, whatever knowledge you have, then you'll never be aware of Krishna, that He's there, He's doing it. So we have an intimate relationship. Krishna is arranged. Unless Krishna put the sun in the sky, you would have a sun. None of us would have a sun. It would be very cold. Unless he put the moon there, the vegetables wouldn't grow, we'd all starve to death. So there's a very intimate relation with Krishna everywhere, at every moment. But we just don't recognize it, that's all.
But when Indra was praying, giving his excuses, then Krishna seemed not very interested, and he was like, knowing who is this person.
Indra was praying, I think you were
Brahma.
No. Krishna was a little cowherd boy in Vrindavan. Brahma was offering very elevated prayers. Krishna acknowledged them, yes, it's very nice. But actually Krishna himself, he's interested in spontaneous love. He didn't neglect Brahma, he listened to the prayers. He showed Brahma his maximum amount of mercy by expanding himself into so many cowherd boys and calves. But as far as being impressive to Krishna, all the philosophy that Brahma said, Krishna said, that's nice, but actually I'm here for love, for spontaneous love. But Brahma wasn't actually in that mood. Therefore Krishna, you know, he didn't become overwhelmed by Brahma's prayers. Oh, praying, you know, your love for me is so great. He accepted it. It was very nice. You understood. Now go back to the Brahma Loka and try and chant your rounds better. Therefore, Brahma had to come back to Saritas Thakura and actually chant his rounds better. And then Lord Chaitanya was impressed. Lord Krishna was impressed.
So I guess the advice is to chant your rounds better.
Yes, that's yeah. Yeah, that's our most, that is Krishna's personally coming, his present in his holy name. We just have to pay attention and chant it with devotion. Because only by devotion Krishna reveals himself. And if we chant it some other way, Krishna will reveal himself very slightly, but it may not be very satisfying for us or Krishna. So we have to learn the art of how to come to the platform, chanting with devotion and attention. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandhara Srimad Bhagavatam Kidam.